If your nerve deny you, go above your nerve.
Hello and welcome to episode 43 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about the new movies coming out and then some. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Prochko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
All right, so this week we are going to start with our favorite Christmas movies, then move on to Zero Motivation and finish up with Wild. And I'm going to begin with the Christmas movie topic. And we're just going to blow through our favorite movies to watch during the holiday season. And mine is Home Alone, because I have been watching that movie since, like, I can't even remember how long. And, I mean, not even just on Christmas, but every single holiday. And I guess I do know how long. The movie came out in 1990, so I guess I've been watching it for that long. But I still quote it to this day. I feel a little silly giving a synopsis, but, I mean, just in case you haven't seen this movie, it's about a boy named Kevin McAllister who gets in a fight with his family, and he's like, I don't need you, that kind of stuff. And then he wakes up the next day, and they're just gone. And it's because they flew away for a trip, and they accidentally left him at home. And it's the saddest thing ever. But there's so many things in this movie that I think about. I mean, I want to say on at least a weekly basis. Like, every single time I'm in the airport and I'm running, like, what else is there to think about? But the McAllister family running through the airport. And, you know, even when I'm home alone sometimes and I hear something, and, I mean, basically every single movie at this point that has some sort of, like, a booby trap element, it's like, oh, that's, they're doing that Home Alone style.
But yeah, I thought of it even when The Equalizer came out, and there's a scene where Denzel Washington sets a bunch of booby traps, and I was like, he's home aloneing the place.
It's a weird thing, though, to watch that movie as an adult, and you're just like, like, I feel like the zaniness is a little less zany, and it's a little more just like, this child is a monster. And, like, they're trying to, like, they're horrible people, and I'm not saying they don't deserve it, but there's, like, a certain element where I was like, you twist this a little bit in one direction, and this is just a horror movie.
You kind of feel like maybe Kevin has, like, gotten a taste for blood now, and he's, like, gonna grow up.
I would watch
that. You know, I guarantee you, if you had, like, swapped the score of the movie and put in a really dark horror movie score, I bet you anything, it'd be like, You know when they, like, reappropriate trailers to turn them into a different
genre? I guarantee you that trailer already exists. Yeah, I think that trailer exists.
When you think about it, like, I'm just picturing him stepping on the Christmas ornaments and, like, burning his hand on the knob. That's, I mean, that's scary shit. That hurts.
I have a question for you. How many Home Alone sequels exist?
Is there, like, five?
There are five!
It's sad that I know that.
There were two that went to theaters, and then there was three and four with a different kid, and Holiday Heist is the last one, because no one wants to call it Home Alone 5.
Didn't one of them come out seen a lot of them. Fairly recently?
2012.
I remember recording
them. Oh, really? Jesus, yeah. I didn't realize it was that soon.
That's some fun trivia for y'all.
No, I mean, I love Home Alone 2. Not as much as I love Home Alone 1, but I've seen that one a lot, and it's a lot of fun, especially when you live in New York City.
Actually,
and,
like,
I see all those locations. Like, I always dream of walking into the park on a cold day and, like, swapping turtle doves with a homeless lady, but that's never going to happen.
I read an article on, like, Flavorware or something that was all about how messed up the geography is in Home Alone 2, which is exactly the kind of thing you would only know if you lived in New York, but if you think about it for 2 seconds, you're just like, there's no way he could run from, like, point A to point B in 5 minutes or whatever.
Hey, it's a movie, whatever. All right, so go watch Home Alone. It's my favorite holiday movie ever, and my favorite every day of the year movie ever, too. All right, so next up, Angie, you want to take it with yours?
Yes. So my favorite holiday movie that I want to talk about today is Bad Santa, which...
I forgot something, though.
Why? Oh, did you print that out and frame it?
No, it's on my phone.
Oh,
but that's
God,
a good idea.
Like,
maybe I'll do that. Okay, Bad Santa, you can continue now.
It's my Christmas card. Is that not what we're doing?
It should be the Popcorn Prosecco Christmas card.
Anyway, you only picked Home Alone as an excuse to bring that back up. Anyway, guys, getting back to business, the movie I picked is Bad Santa, because I am a Grinch with a shriveled heart. I don't know, I've just never really been into, like, the sentimental, sappy side of Christmas. It's just, I don't, like, hate it, but it's just not really for me. So obviously I enjoy this movie because it's all about, you know, it's about a Grinch and not like the kind of Grinch that's like secretly nice on the inside, like a bad person who is like a bad person the whole time. I think that this movie just I guess I should talk about the plot for a little bit. So Billy Bob Thornton plays a con man who dresses up as Santa as part of an elaborate con. And one year he comes across this kid who is just so pathetic and so sad that even this horrible human being starts to feel sorry for him. And at the same time, he strikes up a romance with Lauren Graham, who is a Jewish woman with a Santa fetish, because that's the kind of movie this is.
I've never watched this.
Are you serious?
Really?
Okay.
I haven't.
Oh, it's funny.
Well, but, like, my thing is, like, I really get upset about cynical Christmas specials and movies. Like, I love Futurama, but every one of their Christmas specials, like, infuriates me. I'm not religious, but, like, I like Christmas as, like, a time to escape cynicism and show love and give gifts, and I get into all that. So, like,
Santa's the movie for you, then.
Yeah.
I think what I like about it, though, is that it is kind of, you know, it's not like a Charlie Brown Christmas movie or something. It's not all about, like, oh, joy to the world and warmth and happiness and joy and love. But it is actually kind of, like, weirdly sweet without being one of those movies that... It doesn't feel phony. Does that make sense?
You make it sound like it's a Christmas movie for assholes.
It is.
I'm an asshole, because you said you enjoyed this movie, so I'm inadvertently being like, Andy, how's an asshole?
Right there.
Oh, Christy, I fully admit I'm an asshole and that is why I like this movie.
Whatever happened to Bad Santa 2? Is that still a thing?
They keep talking about it. I don't know if they're going to do it. I don't really have any interest in seeing it, honestly.
It's like bullshit talking about it, though, right? Not like the real thing. Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those sequels that, like pretty much every other movie that was remotely popular, the stars and directors say every once in a while, like, yeah, we're trying to make a sequel.
Yeah,
I'd love to do that.
You know, Man 2, he wants to happen. You're just like, Pauly Shore, no one cares.
I think that they did actually get as far as trying to hire a director. I don't know if
Encino
really
Man 2 happened, it would go straight to DVD.
Yeah.
Yes.
VOD.
And, like, Brandon
whatever.
Fraser wouldn't appear, and you'd be like, that's how low you are as a Brandon Fraser.
We need
Fraser
to have, like,
really
a favorite movie episode that somehow lets me put Encino Man in there. Because I do love me some Encino
Yeah,
Man.
I do.
We'll save
so
that for later.
Yeah, sorry. Let's back to Christmas movies.
Yes. So this movie, I think, just to sum up, what I really like about it is that it is dark and twisted and kind of cynical. But it's not so dark and twisted and cynical that it leaves you feeling bad, and yet it doesn't cross over to the sentimental side so well, so quickly that it feels unearned. Christmas movie for assholes. So if you like them warm and fuzzy like Christy does, then you probably won't watch it. But if you are a self-admitted asshole like I am, then you'll probably enjoy it.
All right, so Christy, after how you feel about Bad Santa, I'm not really surprised by what you chose.
Right, yeah, like my favorite Christmas movie is A Muppet Christmas Carol. I love it because, like, it has dark elements because it kind of suits my personality in that I think that there are a lot of terrible things in the world, and this week in particular I feel like there's been a lot of them. But I love media and entertainment that says, yeah, there are these terrible things, but look at these great things too. And not to ignore the terrible things, but to understand it's all kind of part of this thing. And A Muppet Christmas Carol is just adorable, and it's weirdly faithful to the original story. But with bringing Muppets into it, and Michael Caine is hilarious, and the song numbers are wonderful, and I actually did a piece for Mental Floss that'll be coming out soon about, like, fun facts you didn't know about The Muppet Christmas Carol, and it made me even more excited about the movie, because there's all these really cool things about just, there's such a mythos of the Muppets already, and that gets brought into the movie, but then also, like, all these people working on behind the scenes have been doing it for ages, and it was the first Muppet movie without Jim Henson, but it still very much feels like a Jim Henson movie because of everything he set up before he died. And it's such a beautiful movie that just makes me happy. And, like, from every song to, like, it feels like Christmas. I'm like, it does. Like, I watched it the other day while I was, like, gift wrapping. I was just like, I am living the dream right now. Like,
it just delights me.
I'm kind of getting the feeling that just depending on how much of an asshole you are, like, that's how you should pick the movies. If you're not an asshole, go with Christy's Choice. If you're kind of an asshole, go with Home Alone. And if you're a total asshole, then you
that's
go with Bad
Santa. That's a really good way to break it down, actually. You just need to use the asshole meter. It's fine.
And now you know which one of us is the most and least evil.
All right. So let's move on to our first movie that we're going to discuss today that's actually coming out this weekend. And that is Zero Motivation. Angie, you're going to take that one.
Yes. So Zero Motivation is a movie about, it's an Israeli army movie. And I feel like when you hear that, you think it's going to be about, like, war and self-sacrifice and, like, heroic people and, you know, bad people and whatnot. It's not about that. It's more like Office Space, because the soldiers in this movie, it's about a group of female soldiers who for their compulsory military service have been assigned to work in an administrative office. Like, all they do is paperwork, and they're so bored. And it's really more like Office Space than, like, I don't know, Flags of Iwo Jima or something.
Office Space meets Clueless, because they're all young women who just don't give a shit.
No, no. It's a really unusual movie, first and foremost, just because it's like a... We've just never seen a movie about a bunch of Israeli female soldiers who work in an administrative office before. I think this might be literally one of the only movies about that subject ever made. But it's also just got, like, a weird sense of humor. It's, like, not afraid to get weird. So the main characters are these two girls. One of them is she's, like, really clueless, but also really ambitious in her own way, like, really self-absorbed. And then her best friend, who is just like a rebel, who's just like, whatever, you know, fuck you, I'm just gonna sit here and play Minesweeper. And then their poor boss, who is like a officer who actually means well, but has no control over these girls. Those are the main players. And the, it's three vignettes that are kind of connected, but really it's just, you know, you just kind of go in and out of their lives.
It makes me wish that this was a TV show and not a movie.
Absolutely.
I would totally come back every single week and watch, like, another little one of those vignettes.
Especially because there are other characters in it that are not as well fleshed out, but you kind of get the feeling that they would be fun to hang out with also. So,
my, like, favorite supporting character is the one that, like, they think becomes possessed.
Yes.
I think that might have been my favorite part of this entire movie. Because it was, like, there's such, like, obvious telltale signs of, like, you know, like, horror movie-type cliches with possessions, but it's not that at all, so it was kind of weird seeing something done from that perspective. Irina.
Yes.
It's also just such a funny movie because it doesn't play by our expectations as, like, you know, American movie watchers, so there's, like, elements of it that are, like, really weird and a little horror movie, frankly, and then there's elements of it, like, a lot of people are calling it Stripes in a way, and, like, yeah, I get that, but it's funny because it's, like, I feel like you're going to hear it's about office workers and think it's not funny or exciting, but it's, like, really goofy and... I was, like, watching it, I was just kind of continually bemused because I didn't know what was going to happen next because, as Angie said, this was so off of anything I had seen before.
It's interesting because the characters, they're not particularly likable. There's something,
assholes.
I like hanging out with them and all. Like, I like spending time and watching what they were doing, but I didn't necessarily care when they would get in trouble because I cared about them.
Honestly.
The situations they get involved in are, like, you genuinely want to see how they end.
Well, it's also different because, like, here in America, we don't have compulsory service or anything, which is, like, they have to do this. So it's just, like, this, like, ugh. Like, I remember in high school we had community service, and you would be, like, picking up trash or you would be, like, helping out with old folks and just feeling like you were so oppressed or something. But, like, you know, in American movies about the military, you have people who chose that and who signed up for that a lot of the time. Yes, I know we used to have a draft, but in movies nowadays, the focus is, like, always on people who are, like, either, like, you know, like, in favor of their, like, trying to fight for their country, or at the very least being, like, disillusioned by it, but, like, these girls,
sometimes they have movies about, like, people who are, like, really desperate, like, American, you know, soldiers, or, like, people who are really desperate, and that's why they sign up. But this one, it's just, like, you see that the difference between how, you know, the difference is that since it's compulsory, for these people, it's just a rite of passage, it's just something to get through, it's, like, not anything dramatic.
But like, it also does a good job of representing the fact that it also doesn't have to be that.
Yeah.
Like, there's ways to make it something more, and then just figuring out the divide between all the characters and who actually wants to go that far and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And who wants to go that far for the right reasons.
Yeah, actually, the most sympathetic character in the movie is, like, who is... I guess the two main characters would see her as a villain. It's their boss, who actually seems like she actually genuinely wants
a
military
career.
She, like, she's trying so hard, she means so well, and just at every turn, these, like, horrible people in her charge.
It's so sad seeing her story play out compared to the other two girls. One who just, like, I mean, like, rock bottom, just doesn't
and
give
again,
a shit
something
about
you wouldn't
anything.
See in an American movie. They would never let the, like, main characters of an American movie, especially girls, be kind of as despicable as these girls get. Because, like, they do shit to her that is just not okay.
Well, it's just that one that is particularly despicable.
Well, the other one is constantly...
That's probably my only complaint, is I never really knew how to feel about her.
Oh, yeah. I thought that even though the two main characters, their names are Zohar, who's like, a bigger asshole, and Daffy, who's kind of Daffy. They're assholes, but I kind of felt for them in some way, also, especially Zohar. Like, she starts out... She's... a very big personality, and she causes a lot of trouble, but you do see where she's coming from.
I was feeling for her for a while, but after she did that second, like, prank type thing, you're just, like, mean. That's mean.
Yeah, that's what I turned to my husband, and I was like, I don't know how to feel anymore. Like, I was, like, upset for her. I was
It does mean something that it had that kind of effect on you.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. I saw this at Tribeca Film Festival last year, and it was one that everybody was talking about because, like, from just, like, a critic level, being like, oh, well, did you see the Israeli documentary or the Israeli film about female soldiers? Like, it has that kind of, like, that soundbite. But then, I was like, oh, yeah, it's a comedy. And I was like, what? And so I watched it, and I was like, this is just, I feel like that's why we're trying so hard to give you things that it's sort of like, because it's not like a lot.
It reminds me a lot of the last two Israeli movies that I saw at Tribeca, Big Bad Wolves and, shit, what was their first movie called before Big Bad Wolves? I'm going to look it up. But it reminds me of that, and that it's a very unique sense of humor that we're not used to seeing, and it's almost impossible to describe. Like, when I went into that first Israeli movie that I can't remember the title of right now, I didn't appreciate it until I was, like, 30 minutes of the way in, because I went in knowing nothing, and I had a little bit of a hard time adjusting, but once I realized what I was getting myself into, it's like, you know, this is really creative and fun, and that's kind of what this is. And I really do want a Zero Motivation TV show. What? Oh, Rabies.
You know, even though we're talking about how it's really unusual, the other thing that I was kind of surprised by the first time I watched this movie is that it's still really accessible. Like, it is different from what we're used to. And like Christy said, that's one of the reasons we're having a difficult time describing it, is because it's so unique. But I don't want to make it sound like this is the kind of movie where, you know, you have to be like either you get it or you don't. Like, it's not hard to laugh.
Yeah, the comedy translates pretty well. It's just that I think what we're saying is, like, their brand of humor is a little pricklier than ours, I guess.
That's a good way to describe
it. And you also, the other thing that you need to know about this movie is to just go with it, because it goes in some weird, bizarre directions that don't make sense from, like, a realistic standpoint. But...
And some dark directions, too. Yeah. I mean, it brings up some topics that are, you know, probably should be dealt with a little longer than this movie does deal with them, but it worked within the world that the filmmakers established.
I feel like we've had a lot of good sort of foreign or indie movies about female friendships this year, like between this and like We Are the Best and Wetlands.
Oh, Wetlands, stop it.
I mean, the relationship in it was good. The movie was freaking gross. Christy is grinning like a maniac.
I know. I can't tell if I'm going to put that. It feels unfair to put Wetlands on my worst of the year, but it might be on my best worst movie list because it's a good movie that I just hated.
I
think we should do a recap at the end of the year of like a movie. Yeah, like so, like we should figure that out because I love Wetlands. I think Wetlands will be in my top 10. I really love Wetlands.
For me, the best worst movie of the year would be Winter's Tale, obviously.
Well, that's definitely really the number one on that list.
Right.
All right. So, what do we think? Recommend it?
Zero Motivation?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I do, too.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's like, if it all sounded easy to you, check it out.
It's really charming and just entertaining and funny and unique, and I really hope that we see more of the filmmaker and the actors in it.
I want a TV show. I feel like if I bring it up enough, maybe someone out there will hear me and it'll happen.
But you start the Facebook campaign. I would totally
I really should. Or I'll just make like a Zero Motivation TV show Twitter handle, and then I'll get like a million random followers that are probably like spam bots or something, but look what happened with the ball droid. You know, immediately after the Star Wars trailer hit, someone made the ball droid Twitter account,
and
like, who was one of the first ones to follow it? Obviously me, and now the freaking account has like thousands and thousands of followers, and it's the cutest account that I've followed in a while.
Someone already has that as a tattoo. I saw that on some site.
I saw that. See, I don't think I would go that far until I saw the ball droid in action and realized that I loved it as much as I think I do right now.
What if it's evil? That's what I say to the person with that tattoo.
You're
you don't
evil.
Know.
It could turn out to be the next Jar Jar Binks. Binks.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? And then it's tattooed on this poor person's body.
Right. Anyway.
All right. Next movie, Christy, you're talking about Wild.
Yeah, I got no segue at all. That's here, new movie. Wild is the latest film by Jean-Marc Vallée, who did Dallas Buyers Club last year. and now he's got Wild, which is based on the memoir by Cheryl Strayed and stars Reese Witherspoon as Strayed, and it's about Strayed kind of severely fucked up her life. She got involved in drugs, she cheated on her husband, and was like, didn't know what to do next. And so she decided that she was going to walk the Pacific West Trail, is that right?
Pacific. The
PCT. Pacific Coast Trail.
Yeah.
There we go. And it's this huge hike that she walked literally like 1,000 miles by herself. I don't know. It was real strange. It's one of those things where I was like, why do you do that? And I feel like the movie does nicely lay out why she does that, but instead of it being in chronological order, it like starts with her at kind of her lowest point on the trail and then goes flashing back, and we kind of move back and forth, which I liked a lot because I felt like if they had just done the trail as one big block, it would have gotten kind of monotonous. But instead, it's like you get to know this character in kind of bits and pieces. And this is mostly talked about because of Witherspoon's performance. And it's Reese Witherspoon, like, I had never seen her before. She's laying down cursed. She's totally naked at one point. She's doing drugs and dirty and gross. And I don't mean, like, dirty like dirty. I mean, like, dirty like she's supposed to need a bath. It's a pretty sensational movie, actually. I think a 127 hours type thing, minus all the music video stuff that Danny Boyle brings to the table.
I absolutely love this. I get why people are talking about it because of Reese Witherspoon's performance, but I also think we should be talking about it for many other reasons. I mean, the award screener has a bunch of categories that it should be considered for. Like, I think it definitely should be up for screenplay, and I mean, best director and best picture, too. This is now on my top 10 of the year. I was just so incredibly moved by this movie because, you know, even though I couldn't relate to what she went through, like, I have never done heroin, and I don't know if I'm ever going to, you know, go on the PCT to, like, chill out and figure out my own problems, but there was something relatable about what she's going through and the idea of thinking that, like, you've hit rock bottom and have nothing in your life and can't go on any further, but then finding something that's there, and it's kind of like, don't, like, get swallowed up by all that because things can get better down the line, and just the message was, like, really moving and inspiring at the end. And I really can't believe how well the cutting between the trail and the flashbacks worked. Because normally you get a flashback and it's like, oh, shit, they're going to do a flashback. Like, this is just forced exposition. Screw this. But it is so incredibly well woven. And not just that, but, like, you're seeing what she's doing on the trail. You're seeing the flashbacks. And then so much is happening inside her head. She's saying a lot inside her head, too, and all three pieces are just completely seamless.
I think the way that they edited it was such a good, because I'm getting the impression that the book is very internal, because the main plot is just literally this one person by herself walking. And I thought that the editing did such a good job of kind of weaving in and out of her backstory. It's cut together in a way that I think really, really makes you feel like you're in her head. It's a little bit impressionistic, like it's kind of just like scattered all over the place. Some of the scenes are really short, some of them are really, really long recollections, and it's a lot like how you would actually remember your own life if you were walking along, and like, you know, sometimes you'd remember just a flash of something in verse, or sometimes you'd remember longer things that are important. The thing that I know that you're saying, you know, so I agree that this deserves credit for more than just Reese Witherspoon's performance, but I loved her performance, and I've been rooting, so I loved Reese Witherspoon from, you know, when she was, like, younger, and she had her, like, you know, career up to Legally Blonde was pretty exciting and all over the place, but I feel like lately she's done so many, like, America's Sweetheart type roles, so I wouldn't necessarily say, like, oh, I didn't know Reese Witherspoon had it in her. I'm just so happy to see her go back to that, kind of like Matthew McConaughey last year.
No, I would totally agree with that. There's something that just, again, going back to the idea that I have nothing, like, I have never done the same thing she's done, but she feels like such a real person that it's so easy to connect to her. And I cannot believe the age range she nails. Like, how young is she supposed to be? Is she just starting college at this point?
I think that by the time...
Look, I mean, that's us playing fast and loose with what college students look like, but, like, it works well enough.
I mean, I totally bought it. I bought it every step of the way.
I want to talk about Laura Dern in this movie, who I think does such a great job because she's a little bit idealized because she's really just in flashbacks, and it's this, you know, Cheryl is thinking of her mother and mostly about all the positive things and things that she loved about her. But I thought that Laura Dern did such a good job of seeming like a real person, even though she was being idealized by Cheryl. Like, she has just, like, so much, like, radiant light coming from her, and you absolutely fall in love with her as, like, the way that Cheryl loves her.
Really, every single supporting performance, so, like, basically every performance but Reese Witherspoon's, also stands out. Like, I can remember almost every single person she meets on that trail, and she runs into a lot of people, and we also meet a lot of people in the flashbacks, but I can remember every single person. And, like, I can't even say that about certain unnamed movies that I've seen, like, a couple days ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm definitely pulling for this one to win some awards. I hope there's a little more talk about it, because, you know, I've loved some of the things that people have been talking about specifically since TIFF, but I don't think anything has lived up to the hype quite like this, except maybe Birdman. I'm still over the moon about Birdman, but, you know, I could go through a list of movies right now that I've seen that people are going to say are going to win everything, and, you know, I'm not that into it. And I feel like people aren't talking up Wild right now as much as they should be.
Yeah, I hear people talk about Reese Witherspoon's performance a lot, but I don't think people are talking about the movie as a whole as much.
Exactly. And that, I mean, I want, again, I think Reese Witherspoon's performance is fantastic, and I think she definitely deserves at least a nomination, but I think more needs to be recognized than has
been.
Well,
I want to point out something. So I compared this to 127 Hours, which I feel like both in concept and in like, emotional narrative is similar, because you have someone pushing themselves through an incredibly difficult situation that they themselves got themselves into to survive. And one, it's a literal sense, and in one, it's more of a, like, correcting your life before everything goes out of hand sense. But this is not getting talked about the way 127 Hours gets talked about, the way Theory of Everything gets talked about, the way Imitation Game gets talked about. The, you
know, let me guess what those all have in common.
I know, I was just going to say.
But, right? If it's a biopic about a woman, it does not get taken with the same kind of, like, ooh, Oscar, as fucking dude picks.
If it's a biopic about a woman, then the marketers have to go out of their way to emphasize it's not just a chick flick, guys. Men can watch us, too. Like, I saw, like, some quote where they were like, oh, no, wow, this is a pretty macho movie. And I was like, you wouldn't have to say that about Theory of Everything, despite the fact that it's about a fucking nerd. Yeah. I mean, no disrespect, but, you know, he's not, like, an athlete or anything.
That's upsetting to think about that. I actually think this is better than 127 Hours. Like,
I do too.
I was very into what happens to him and the fact that this one crazy thing happens to him and he needs to find a way out in order to save his life. But this is a much deeper journey in order for her to save her life that meant a little more to me.
It has much more emotional depth and even more thematic depth, because I think you get a much better sense of, like, who she is, how she ended up here, where she's going next, etc.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I mean, some movies that I can't talk about yet, but I've seen some other movies. There's so many goddamn biopics about dudes coming out this Christmas, like, holiday. I just... And, like, honestly...
It's Oscar movie season. Of course there are.
I would love to see someone do a mashup of all of these, because it's just, they're so similar, where it's like, he faced incredible struggle, and he overcame, and like...
And most of the time he's an asshole, but he's also brilliant, so it's okay that he treats people like shit.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, like, it's hard not to get a little cynical about these when you see them, and you're just like, well, how are these different from the other 100 of these I've seen? And like... You know, it's not that Wild does something wildly different. Oh, God.
I see what you did.
That was embarrassing. but it's like, it was really engaging, and, you know, it took this story, and it didn't dress it up, and it really went for it, and I thought all that was really admirable. Now, for me, it's not in my top 10 of the year, because I thought it was really admirable, but frankly, there were things I liked better. But I think it's bizarre that a movie like this that, frankly, if you ignore the fact that it's about a woman, would probably be up for much more attention, because for some reason the Academy and the award circuit in general seems to just inherently respect movies about men more.
I felt that way also about... We're getting off topic, I'm sorry, but I just want to throw in real quick that I felt that way also about Belle, which I finally saw last night, which is another movie that I was like, if this had been about a man, it probably would have gotten more attention and not just been dismissed as like, oh, it's Jane Austen.
It's a girl book. Yeah. Like, it's like, I think Belle is extraordinary, and I'm astounded that more people aren't talking about it.
I still need to see it. But
going back to Wild, yes, I think thumbs up, I would recommend. I don't think, like, I'm with Christy, it's probably not going to make my top 10 just because there are other movies that I liked better, but it's a really incredibly good performance from Reese Witherspoon. I've been rooting for years for her to, like, get away from, like, the sweetheart roles and, like, do something kind of interesting and weird and a little bit unlikable again, and I'm so excited that she's back.
No, this is definitely in my top 10. It is in my top 10 right now. I do have a lot of screenings coming up next week specifically, so things could, you know, get shook up just a little bit. But this movie meant a lot more to me than even some of the other movies on my top 10. And I, like, normally I'd be a big baby about it, and I wouldn't want to watch it again because I found some stuff in it really, really sad. But I've really actually never had that happen and then leave me wanting to see it again, which I find very interesting, but I do want to watch this again.
I was also really impressed that I genuinely understood why she went on this journey, where, like, when I read the plot synopsis of it, I was like, the hell? Huh. And admittedly, I'm not an outdoorsy person. But, like,
Did it make you want to do it at all?
No.
It did when I first heard about it, and then I saw the movie, and I was like, nope.
I'm very
first. I was like, oh, walking in nature for fun.
When she was walking all nice in the sunlight, you know, making some, like, decent-looking oatmeal, I was like, you know, maybe I could do that. But then I think about really stupid practical things. Like, I wear contacts. How could I do that and, like, wear contacts?
You know? I do want to tell you guys that, like, a week ago, I walked part of the Pacific Crest Trail. I walked,
really?
I visited my mom who lives near it, and I walked like half a mile of it.
All right, that's
so
something.
I basically did wild, you guys.
Wild is what.
How many miles is it again?
It's like 1,000. I walked like, I don't even. Yeah, I walked like half a mile.
Three city blocks.
It's more than you guys have walked wild.
It is. It's true. I am not an outdoorsy person. I very much enjoy movies about such things. But I have been an indoor kid, and I'm fine with it.
All right. So on that note, we recommend Wild, but maybe don't recommend doing the PCT anytime soon. But if one of us does it, hey.
But now we know that if you do it, make sure you get the right size shoes.
That's true. That's true. And you don't let them... Well, I don't want to spoil that, I guess.
Yeah. Anyway.
I like that part. All right. So that's it. And... yeah, you can watch us on YouTube, which you might be doing right now, but you can also watch Popcorn and Prosecco on iTunes, and that is where we would love for you to rate us, comment, give reviews, all that good stuff, because we like reading it. Yeah, subscribe, please. And then you can also catch us on our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We are also on Facebook, so go like us there. And then the three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to go first?
Hey, I am at Christy Puchko on Twitter, and yes, I am all over the internet, so if you want to keep up with me, you can go to Twitter or decadentcriminals.com, where I post the highlights of what I've written that week.
Angie?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can get me on Twitter at PNemiroff, and then I write for platter.com. So that is it for episode 43, and we'll see you next week for 44.
Must have been some breakup, huh?
Breakup is sort of a shorthand.